station support comes from the Alaska Wild Salmon Company, delivering fresh salmon to Juneau homes since 2006. Learn more about delivery options at goodsalmon.com or 907-321-4997.
You're listening to Culture Rich. Culture Rich.
Culture Rich Conversations. Today's show is a collaboration between KTOO and the Black Awareness Association of Juneau. I am your host, Michael Patterson, and I'm sitting here with my mother, Sherry Patterson. And we are joined today by my best friend and brother, Michael Barnes, and his lovely mother, my second mom, Miss Lynn Barnes. How you doing, Mom?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. I'm actually fantastic because on top of my mother being here, we also have my second mom. And my brother here as well. My best friend will be on the line. So it's going to be a very good conversation. I'm looking forward to it. Can you hear me, guys? Are you there?
Yeah, we got you.
Hey. Now, this is my first time speaking with Mom in a while. How you doing, Mom?
I'm good, Michael. I'm good.
Good, good.
How are you?
Well, I'm great now. I understand that, Mom.
Mm-hmm.
For the purposes of this conversation, I'm going to have to refer to one of you by your name. So I'm going to go with the woman to my left who birthed me. So, Mom, happy Mother's Day to you.
Thank you.
Mama Lynn, happy Mother's Day to you as well.
Thank you, Michael.
Happy Mother's Day to Mom Sherry and my mom as well.
Thank you, Michael.
So I'll kind of dive right into it. It's really awesome to have you guys both here today. I think for a host of reasons, but mainly because this is, the social upheaval we're having in the country right now where race is concerned. And even on a wonderful day that we celebrate moms, it's always hanging there. And it's kind of funny that a lot of people don't know that my best friend is white. It has been. He's been my brother since I was 5 years old, 5 or 6,
that's right?
And my second mother is, you guessed it, because it really it and I always definitely admired you, Miss Lynn, for that. You never. I wouldn't have known that I was black unless they told me. You never treated me any different, and you raised a great son, by the way, who the same way, man. The guy's special, man. And as I've grown older, I realize it more and more. You see a lot of stuff going on in the world. Just to have had somebody like that in my life for all these years, fantastic. And so kudos to you. Hats off to you. Indeed. What was it like? I'm not going to ask Mike. Because when I mentioned to Mike, or when he mentions to my son or other people the first time we met, it's not the most flattering conversation. Doesn't paint me in the best of lights. But if I may ask, Miss Lynn, what was it like for you? Was there ever anything, I don't know, was it weird to have me around?
I have to say that to your entire family, it was just, I almost felt like an instant connection.
Mm-hmm.
And to have you in my home was keeping up with your energy. You know, you were a very busy, busy little boy.
Yep.
but always polite. And when I said no, you know I meant no.
Yes, we did.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes, we absolutely did. Mom, how about for you? Was it interesting for you to have Mike?
No, not at all. Like Lynn said, it was almost just natural, instant connection. We lived right next door to each other for several years, and it was as if we were almost one family. Both of our young sons were Mike and Michael, and the fact that we were different skin tones, it never even came up, really. I remember you as a child calling him Pink Mike, and we never corrected him. He said I shouldn't say that on the radio, but he did. He was a kid, you know, and we never talked about the difference in skin tones, how someone might be different because they were not the same skin tone as he was. So in his young 5- and 6-year-old mind, you know, it was Pink Mike, and we never corrected him. And you know, as the years went by and he started noticing, he and his sister basically noticing that they were different, or people started treating them different because of their skin tone, that's when we had the talk. But it never came up in our family in reference to the Barnes family. Not at all.
And I guess that's kind of where I'm going somewhere with this. I was kind of alluding to for you, Ms. Lynn, was did that ever happen for you? Like, was there ever a conversation you had to have with Mike regarding me or hanging out with me or how people may treat him as a result or anything like that? Did you guys ever have that conversation or just kind of went by the wind?
We had a conversation probably more than once, but when I found the need to have a conversation was when we were out in public, and Juno did not have a lot of black people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I never thought about it. It never crossed my mind that someone would treat my two children at the time. I mean, those were, you know, if you were with me, you were my kid,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so there was a couple of incidences where remarks were made. And so I wanted to have that conversation with my Michael, that this is wrong. This person is ignorant. And, you know, because the kids, you guys never even, I mean, it just never, it was just you were who you were.
Right. That's
and
right.
So the conversation usually evolved because of someone else's ignorance. I remember once being in the grocery store and a comment was made out loud. And I felt poor, you know, very poorly for the children. And then I got mad, and I probably didn't act the most Christian way that I could have. But I don't apologize for that.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't recall us ever. In fact, we used to laugh because my Michael had really, really curly hair. And they used to say that was one of the things they had in common.
Oh, my goodness.
You mean that mop top? No. Yeah. You had a lot of hair, man. A lot.
Yeah. He did. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So no, I don't. I'm thankful that God allowed me to have an understanding and to help, hopefully, both of the boys not create a prejudice towards the person that was prejudiced, because that was not appropriate either. We needed to pity those who didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And you did. You were successful, ma'am. It absolutely. My relationship with Mike 100% is responsible for my perception and for my willingness to let ignorance be ignorance and without having to get angry about it. Like, there are times when it happens. But for the most part, I try to look at it like they don't know. If they do and they want to know, then I'll tell them. And if not, then we'll leave it be. And it's because not everybody's like that. And that's because I learned that at a very young age. No, everyone is not like that at all.
Right.
And even when I would have my black friends who would say something like that, I'd be like, no, they're not. No, my best friend is white.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's never dropped that N-word on me. He's never like none of that stuff. Like, no, it's not everybody. So to just paint that with the brush is wrong. Because, you know, you're just making it easy on yourself so you can just be angry, and that's not what it's about. You were very, very successful in shaping that in me early. I don't remember ever getting in any more trouble at your house except for when we broke that bunk bed.
Oh, the bunk bed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Lord.
The bunk bed.
Oh, I tell you what.
Oh, God.
A brand new bunk bed.
I think it hadn't been in there, 10 hours? And we played that stupid game. It wasn't even that fun. Like, it was fun. I'm lying. It was a great one. But it wasn't when Mom and Dad came home. And the look on Mom's face. Yeah. Okay. I guess I'll see you in like a year, Mike. Love you, buddy. But I think moments like that were what really let me know that I was home. Because it was no politeness. There was no, that was, I'm going to kill you. But I do believe that with having kids of my own now and Mike as well, you start to look at the world a little bit differently, mm-hmm. Realizing some of the stuff that you and Mom, you as mm-hmm. well, had to go through in raising us, mm-hmm. right? And realizing that children are really taught a lot of that stuff,
right.
And you can hear it. Like, you can hear people say that to you as much as you want. I don't believe, at least not for me, mm-hmm. that it really stuck there until I had my own children.
Yeah.
And then it's like we're teaching them stuff that lessons I learned from Mrs. Lynn and Mr. Greg, from you and Dad. Like those things.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to impart that into them.
And, you know, the kids are learning earlier than you guys did.
Yeah.
About racism and skin tones and how people perceive them. It was several months ago, maybe even last year, my little baby girl, your daughter, she whispered to me and she said, Grammy, I have a new friend. And I said, oh, that's fun. And I said, you like her? She said, yes. She said, her face is brown like mine. Mm. And I was like, oh, my. She's only 4 years old. And she already know
yes. mm-hmm.
the difference. But that's the world that we live in, and that meant something to her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame that their innocence is lost so early, you know. I think it takes away something. It's good that they know, you know.
Sure.
And but still, I'm like, wow, she's too young. But yet, she's not too young. So... this is the world that we live in.
Yeah, I think that which allows us to make it a better place as a result of it, because I know I've got people out there like Mike and what he's teaching his kids to be and what I am teaching my kids to be, where that's concerned to judge a person by their merit, not their skin. It makes it a lot easier if you can live that mm-hmm. as well. And sometimes I found myself saying things or thinking things and like, okay, where'd that come from? Right, and having the kids kind of helps auto-correct. Now, being in different parts of – Mom, you're in Ohio, right?
Georgia.
I'm in Georgia.
Georgia. Yeah. Georgia. Mm. I mean, Georgia.
Yeah.
Lovely. Lovely time of year right now, isn't it? go ahead.
Let me just say that my eyes have been opened.
Yeah. I bet.
in a whole different way that – I didn't realize how ignorant about a lot of things that I was.
Wow!
And so it's been enlightening. It's I have to say, at times my heart has been saddened.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Seeing the I'll give you a brief example.
Please.
When we were choosing a church. And I'll be very brief, but we were choosing a church, and I was telling someone about the church, and they asked me if it was a white church. And I said, no, it's a red brick church, because I was telling them where it was.
Yeah.
And they looked at me, and they said, no, is it a white church? And I said, no, it's a red brick on this. It never clicked in my head
that they were
what they were asking.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then... we extended the conversation, and I found that to be very sad that mm-hmm. I lived in a time that I thought we were a little bit further past that.
No.
And we're not.
Yeah.
And so that part of it has refocused me in also influencing my grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a granddaughter that's been born and raised here. And so I'm trying my best to influence and to erase some of the influences that she has had simply from living here.
Yeah.
So as a mother, it's critical that we never underestimate our impact on our children and the father,
right.
The parents. We must never, never underestimate that impact.
That's good, Lynn.
That's huge. Mike, if I remember correctly, Mike, me and you had a, and you don't have to go into too much detail, but a similar conversation not too long ago, where you were kind of in the same vein as Mom, where there were some things you were just kind of like, whoa, I didn't realize in the wake of George Floyd and stuff like that, and some things that you had said you had maybe spoken with some of your friends and colleagues down there, and you're kind of surprised at some of the things. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah, very much so. I mean, I've had a couple situations where my eyes were open to different things. One was my wife and I, we adopted our children out of foster care. But before we had these children, we had a little girl in our home for 6 months.
Yeah.
And she was she was a black girl, and I fell in love with this girl like she was my own. And I never, the thought of her being a different race than me, like never, it like never was like really an issue for me. Like I didn't even think about it. I never thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember taking her on base to show her the helicopters and all these things. And everybody was, you know, they were nice. I was introducing them to people. And then the very next day, a guy that I work with came up to me and he said, "Hey man, how is it that you're raising a girl of a different race? Is that really hard for you?" And I was like,
wow.
I was flabbergasted.
Yeah.
I was like,
wow.
I was like, why would it be hard?
Her hair.
I was like, she's a girl.
She's a baby.
I don't understand how that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a baby.
And then, so that like opened up my eyes.
Yeah.
And then with the whole like George Floyd and then just being eyes open, I started talking to people. Like one of my really close friends, he came to me and we were just kind of talking and I said something, I don't remember exactly what I said, but it was somewhat out of ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, "Oh no, man, you don't understand." He's like, I've been pulled over in my uniform, because we were talking about getting pulled over. And like when, if you're in a uniform, a lot of times you can kind of get away with it.
Yes.
And he was like, he's like, son. He's like, I've been pulled over in my uniform in Florida. And I was pulled out of the vehicle, and I was treated like a piece of garbage.
Wow.
And I was like, wait, what?
In the military.
And I was like, in the military.
Wow.
And I could not believe it. I was like, no, man. I was like, there's no way, dude, no way. And he was like, no. He's like, I'm telling you, man, this is real. And I like almost wanted to start crying. I was like, dude, he's like one of the coolest guys I know.
Yeah.
And just a gentleman. He just, the way he talks is elegant, and like he says, I'm like, how did you even think that he was doing anything in crude nature? Why would you pull him over? And then it finally clicked. I was like, because of the color of his skin. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is.
Yeah.
I think we all get
so
culture shocks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Culture shocks from stuff like that. Like I said, I believe that you and Mom are special in that regard, because I mean, what you just said, Mom, about it's a red brick. Like, yeah, that sounds like a very you answer. and it does. I could see that entire conversation happening in my head when you said it. You're just like, what are you talking about? But it comes through, and anybody that's ever met you would say the same thing, and same with you, Mike. I think this really makes you special is the willingness to admit that you were ignorant about it, and then and have the perspective to look back and say, okay, where was I wrong? Like, I really applaud you, Mike, in the conversation that we did have about that you were kind of like, I mean, we've been friends for X amount of years, man, and there's some I had no idea about such and such, and I, like, yeah, you wanted to know. And it's, you're right. We had had some conversations. We had some deeper conversations after George Floyd's than before, because it just never really came up, right? And then I had to look back and go, huh, I guess it never did come up. Mm-hmm. I just never thought about it, because I think if everybody can do that, I mean, if black people are willing to not be outraged every time we hear or see something, and if those on the other side of it are willing to recognize that there's some ignorance there and that were they wrong in their thought life or such, then I think we could, things can make a change, man. I really do. I think it could be some powerful stuff, and you guys are just a living testament to that. And Mike, now you're in Florida, and what part of Florida are you in, sir? Is it Tampa?
Yeah, Tampa area. Yep.
Invasive species, that's right. Rodents, y'all got snakes. I got big old snakes and feral hogs or something like that. Is that really true? You guys really got feral hogs running around down there? Or is that just National Geographic?
Yeah. I mean, not like downtown. Well, not like downtown Tampa.
I hope not.
You definitely go on the outskirts. You go on the outskirts of the Tampa area. Yeah, you'll definitely see them. They're everywhere.
And that's why we haven't visited, ladies and gentlemen. wait for him to come back west. I remember you saying that you just told me recently that you absolutely love that place, that you like it down there. And is it – only reason I'm not asking you, Mom, is because I know what Georgia's like. I've been there. so I know the answer to this question, but in Florida, I don't – is it all as bad as they say on the news, man? Like, about the way people think, or is there a lot more people down there thinking like you? Or is it really – it seems like it's just – they make it sound like it's some sect of the population that's out there in the wake of George Zimmerman and other things with the COVID thing and masking coming along and all that. Like, is it like that for you in your – like, are you living there? Does it feel like that, or is it just
– I mean – a little bit, to some degree. I feel like people who are very much more liberal here as far as all of the COVID goes. But I think there's people that are take it way a little bit too liberal. And I think the issue that I don't like that's going on here is the lack of respect. And that is, so the difference is people here that think masks are dumb, or people that think masks are necessary, right? You can be on both sides of the fence. To me, I have my personal beliefs, but I will never invoke them or push them on people. And in Florida, it seems like that's what they're doing. Like, masks are dumb, and you're dumb because you think vaccines, yada, yada, yada. And they're very outspoken about it.
Right.
I'm like, if they want to get vaccinated, if they want to wear a mask, let them do that.
Yeah.
Why? And if you want to not wear a mask, then, be respectful
that.
If someone says, can you go away because I think I want to protect my children or whatever. Like, just a simple respect thing.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, let me – we're going to go ahead and pause right there, because that's a lot. I got quite a few things to say back about that one, sir. We're going to take a quick break, though, and pay some sponsors. And we'll be right back. This is Culture Rich Conversations with Michael Patterson. Thank you. Thank you. And welcome back to Culture Rich Conversations, a collaboration between KTOO and the Black Awareness Association of Juneau. I am your host, Michael Patterson, and I'm sitting here with my mother, Sherry Patterson. And we are joined today by my best friend and brother, Michael Barnes, and his lovely mother, my second mom, Miss Lynn Barnes. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
We are back, and my mother was saying something to me off the air. How about, I kind of want to throw it back to your moms a little bit.
Okay.
And in the vein of what we were talking about prior to the break, Louisiana.
Louisiana.
That's where you grew up.
Yes.
Mom is in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Michael's in Florida. These are all deeply southern places.
Yes, they are.
Okay? But different times. I didn't grow up there. Obviously, you grew up here. And for good and bad reasons. Some things were good. Some things were great. You grew up in Louisiana. And, Mom, where did you grow up? I don't know. Ms. Lynn?
I actually grew up in Colorado.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If I had to guess that, I'd have been so wrong.
Yeah.
but you guys growing up, what was it like for you growing up in those times as far as racial injustices and stuff like that were concerned? Like Colorado, Louisiana is kind of north.
For me, Louisiana, my birthplace, my birth state, I love it because that's where I got my foundation in almost everything. And that's where my family still is. But we were raised in a very, hostile environment. We lived, on the other side of the track. There was a white neighborhood and a black neighborhood and the two never mixed. The only time we basically saw white folks in the neighborhood was during the summer when they were selling watermelons, you know, come through the, you know, watermelons and the ice cream truck coming through. But it was rare that we saw anybody else other than our own black families in our neighborhood. We integrated into the what we call the white school when I was in the ninth grade, had a fight on the first day. I remember coming into the property of the school and there were hecklers that didn't want that tried to stop the school bus from coming on the school property. And these were kids, my age, our age. And it was bad. It was really bad. You're talking about the late 60s, early 70s, and it was we did not have any advantages other than being allowed to play on the sports teams. Mm-hmm. And I finally got on the booster club. You know, I wanted to be a cheerleader, but I was not chosen for one. My son is looking at me like I'm crazy. I don't think he's ever heard this part.
Never.
And it's interesting. We had a 40-year reunion a few years ago, and that was the first time that blacks and whites came together in an honest environment where we actually could show some love and appreciation and respect for each other 40 years later.
Wow.
And today we're friends on Facebook. We're looking at having our 50th reunion next year. And I think it's been time lost because we could have gotten so much out of being friends, true friends all those years. But because of racism and injustice and equality and that whole environment, it just wasn't going to happen. And I was looking at my nieces and nephews on Facebook during prom season, and you know they're dating people of different skin tones, and I'm like, wow, we've come a long way, because in my prom days, that would have never happened. And so I regret not having what the kids have today, and that's being in a world or an environment where they can be with and interact with someone that doesn't look like them, and it's okay. And I never had that until I was an adult.
Wow.
Yeah.
Miss Lynn, in Colorado is kind of the, that's like where the railroad ended up trying to get to the north of freedom. What was that like?
Well, when I was growing up, again, there was, you know, segregation. I mean, I remember there was a neighborhood off of Colorado Boulevard, and it started, I don't know, it was older homes, and they were known as the matriarch homes of Colorado, downtown Denver and stuff, and they started to sell. And I remember the comment from my parents and from other people that, well, everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket now, you know, because black people were buying these homes. I mean, but they didn't, they were not so kind in their conversations. And I remember thinking, because of the fact that I wasn't, I mean, I went to a school that was predominantly white. I remember a family that moved when I was in junior high. And so we had two young men that came to our school. I was quickly instructed by my parents to absolutely don't even think about dating a black man, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so I saw the other side of it because I credit it to God. I never saw that. It never bothered me. I'm thankful they were not able to instill their fear and their hatred and their ignorance in me. And so not unlike Sherry, I am so thankful that today we're not where we need to be, but we are so much further that our kids and our grandkids can socialize and be with each other and appreciate our differences in a respectful way with integrity that I was not taught. And so, you know, it was just a different side. You know, I just remember. And the prejudice that we had was because Colorado had a lot of Mexican workers that came and worked the farm. I was in an agricultural upbringing. And so there was a lot of prejudice that way, you know, towards the Mexicans and that kind of thing that I experienced. And I just remember thinking, I never want to be that way. And I'm thankful that I wasn't. I mean, the one thing about my mom is she said, I have my own issues and difficulties that I want to overcome, but I don't want my children to have it. My dad just was very blatant. You stay away. You stay with your own kind, you know, that kind of thing. And so to experience, you know, the hate and the ignorance on both sides of the coin, it's interesting how prejudice and hate, it doesn't take on a color, it takes on a mentality, and you know, and that's what we need to try to break a little bit. And I was just saying real quickly, I was astounded. I'm doing a mentoring of a lady that's been born and raised here, and she's 40 years old, and we were talking about things, and she said that LaGrange, which was one of the original colonies settled, which I didn't know until I moved here, in the 90s, still in the 1990s, here in LaGrange, there was segregation. Wow. The library.
Wow.
There was a white library and a black library, a swimming pool. Wow. And then there's a, I was dumbfounded.
Yeah. Well, all the states, those states that are, you know, mostly in the Bible Belt, Texas, Louisiana, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, all in there, still got a way to go. And like you said, it's not what it was. Thank you, Jesus, it's not what it was. But when you get into those states and get into the rural areas and some of the, you know, suburban areas also, it's not as blatant, but it's still there. And I know it's still there. And It's I always said that, you know, all of this starts in the heart, and we have to be the change. Yeah. And if we it starts in our hearts, maybe we one by one we can make a difference in this world, because this is absolutely ridiculous. And I do not want my grandchildren to ever experience the things that I experienced as a child. It was absolutely incredibly hostile. I can't think of a better word. Yeah.
And like I'm seeing it here, but that's why I think it's, I'll go back to my original statement of that it is so critical that until the day I die, I'm going to try to influence and also put myself, this is another conviction that I've had in the last couple of years of living here, is putting purposeful things in my life, whether it be volunteering or awareness or some, so that I can do something to make that difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I be part of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, we can, you know, I don't want to be one of those people who say, well, yeah, things should change, and then I sit on my hands.
Right.
And so I want to always teach my children, my even my adult children and my grandchildren, that it takes us taking the steps forward.
Yes.
We must be ones that are working together. We can't just say it should change and hope, you
right.
know, that it does.
Right.
We have to do something.
Right. Right.
I'm sorry. Listening to you speak, Ms. Linda, is a breath of fresh air. It really is. It really truly is. I'm blown away, and I mean I knew this about you, but for some reason just it is hearing it is fantastic. I too also believe that it's more than just. I guess at the beginning of the show, I was saying that it's taught. And as I was listening to you speak to speak with Slid, I was thinking, how is it – if it was taught, then you should have learned it, right? Because it was set up for you to do so, and yet here you are. So – and this is honest to God – like right now, maybe it's not as taught. I think teaching has its place, obviously, but it – something could just be in your heart. You did that mm-hmm. the little voice in your head that just doesn't you think you know something's wrong. You know something's wrong, and you see it. And no matter what they're telling you, what you're being taught, it's you know for yourself. No, and then just having the strength to follow that voice. Because I mean, it happens on both sides of the conversation. Black mm-hmm. people can be equally and the same things. And I remember going to Louisiana when I was a kid, and they called me Alaska and said that I was the whitest black person they knew. These are my cousins. Yes.
Yeah.
My family.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whitest black guy they knew.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. What does that even mean? And because I didn't talk with the drawl or – because I like certain things, because my best friend was white. Like, these things for them was just foreign. They're just like, I'm not. And I'm just like, why? Like, I don't understand it. But, I just hearing you guys speak now, they say parents are a child's first teacher. How can, how do you believe mother's love can lead to racial healing? And I think, ma'am, you just addressed it a little bit. But if you'd like to speak a little bit more.
Oh, goodness. Well, I think one of the things starts with is in the home. I think when we teach our children that they are accepted despite their difficulties or their challenges or their differences, if we can teach that we accept people the way that God has created them to be, right from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
whether regardless of that, somebody may walk different, they may not be the best reader, or they may not be, but we accept them and we love them through that, then I think it opens up our eyes to be able to love the differences that we don't always understand.
Yeah,
well said.
Or at least at least give it a shot. You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. Ma'am.
And our kids mimic us. They will do and what we do more than what we say. And so if we say that I love this person, this kid, this human being, whoever they might be, and treat them or say something negatively about them when they're not around, those kids are going to pick that up. They're going to be just like we are. But when we can honestly say and come from a heart of love and compassion for mankind, no matter what color their skin is or what they've done or how they live, they those children pick that up from us. They're in the home with us 24/7. So they're going to do what we do, not what we say.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well said. Yeah, I said I've found myself, especially with my son, really trying to live those principles you guys are both speaking about, because it's very true.
Right.
I can say it till I'm blue in the face.
Right. Exactly.
It's what he sees me doing.
Correct. That's right.
You can
That's
say this, right. But when I see you, right, and I'm proud to say that for the most part, I believe, and my son will. If you're interested in getting him up here. But he would say the same thing, that I really do. I don't want you to be averse to that. Mm-hmm. I want you to recognize it and then, you know, walk through it. And take a state, respect people for where they're at. Mm-hmm. And it's human dignity we're talking about, people.
Right.
That's it.
The biggest thing that you can teach your children, too, is that when you're wrong, you apologize.
Right.
You know, teach them forgiveness and teach them that when you're wrong, you apologize. And as a parent, I was wrong sometimes and I had to apologize. And that also teaches acceptance of differences and flaws.
Yeah. Yep. Amen.
Well, time is coming to a close, guys. It's been fantastic.
It has.
It's been a wonderful, wonderful conversation, man. Miss Lynn, love you to death. Mike, love you. This has been a great conversation. Mom, yes. Happy Mother's Day to you. I love you. You've been a phenomenal influence in my life. You're the strongest, best woman I know. Wouldn't be here today without you. I think the world of you, Mom. You're a phenomenal woman.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. And you are. You've done great. And you feel like you've had to go through a lot to do it, because I knew this knucklehead ain't easy. So I appreciate you. Mike, I'd like to give you the floor. If you'd like to that lovely woman over there, feel free, man. The floor is yours. You got a couple minutes.
Yeah, Mom, I just want to thank you for just raising me to be respectful and to have that open mind type of heart. And I just thank you for just the discipline. You were black and white. There was zero gray.
Wow.
And,
wow.
That has pushed me so far in my life. And I just really appreciate it. And I love you.
Awesome.
And I want to thank you for the faith you gave me in Jesus Christ.
Wow. Amen. Amen. And Lynn, I just want to say happy Mother's Day to you, and thank you for being a friend all these years. Oh, my goodness grief. I don't even know how long it's been. It's been over 30, 35 years. And
37.
40. Oh, okay. It's been coming up on 40. And you know what? We cannot talk for a couple of years. And then when we finally do, it's like we just pick up where we left off. And so I am grateful for our lives intercepting all those years ago. It was a divine intervention, and those are the ones that last. And I love and respect you and Greg and the boys, and it's going to be nice when we can have a family vacation to get to visit with you guys. I love you guys. I know we got to wrap it up, but Michael, I love you, hon, and I'm going to make you some gumbo here real soon.
She's going to try to, Michael. If it gets down there, I can't say it.
I need your recipe.
All right, guys, that'll do it for our show this afternoon. Thank you guys again so much for coming on. And this has been Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Michael Patterson. Have a great afternoon. Happy Mother's Day to you all. Bye.
You're listening to Culture Rich. Culture Rich. Culture Rich.